now back to 95.7 The Game.
Sterling Bennett and Dan DeVone. Sterling, you know, I was walking into the studio and our new producer, Mr. Steven Rizzotto, handed me a body armor, one of these new, not the clothing apparel, but a drink. Have
it's
you had
a Clay Thompson brand, right?
It's the what brand?
Isn't it Clay Thompson's, like, sponsorship deal he has with them?
Oh, is he in on it as well? Rizzotto, is that true?
Now,
apparently, because apparently, according to Steven Rizzotto, by the way, who makes the all-Italian name team here at 95.7 The Game, Rizzotto, which is what, it's, I want to say rice and cheese, a little Parmesan, but, so, Clay Thompson is an owner of Body Armor, is that right?
I don't know if he's an owner, but I think he has a sponsorship with them because when I was there working late nights, they'd bring in cases of those and I would take some home for the family when no one knew about it. So I believe so.
Oh, so you were embezzling from the station?
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
My brother was like, these are fantastic. So they're good, I guess.
Yeah, so apparently Buster Posey is...
Oh.
Why wait? At T-Mobile, customers 55...
That's Steven Rizzotto pushing wrong buttons. But, yeah, we're talking about body armor. So, apparently, Rizzotto, we got to give Rizzotto a nickname. Rizzotto tells me that Buster Posey is apparently an investor and an owner of body armor. I haven't talked to you about Buster Posey. You know, it's before we get back to the 49ers, I had to giggle because you know what happens after the World Series? That's when you get into... You know, baseball talks begin. Baseball offseason, the hot stove.
Yeah.
And so...
The winter meetings happen.
The winter meetings. And so what takes place after the offseason is that you have to deal with those players. You have to tender offers to players that are arbitration eligible. And just hearing that phrase, I'm like, really? Buster's going to do this? We're okay with this? Like, really? Buster's going to tender offers to arbitration-eligible players? What the hell does he know about that? I'm sorry. I love Buster as much as the next guy. I'm just sort of very, very cautious about what I think is a precarious move on the part of the Giants, making him the president of baseball ops.
I mean, he's probably not going to actually be the one doing the paperwork. He'll go hire a GM and get the right guy in the building. He's already talking about, you know, Brian Sabian and, you know, Bobby Evans' name has been floated out there. I don't know how much that's actually real or not, but Buster will get somebody he trusts in there to then give the arbitration guys their contracts and tender contracts for him. He'll just kind of steer the ship in the right direction for the guys under him. But I'm excited for Buster. My father, it was anti-Zaidi for a long time. He was like, every game they lost, I told you, this guy's not worth it. He's not built for it. And I was like, Dad, give him a chance. But years go by, and obviously things continue to be the same and be average almost every single year. But I think every Giants fan, whether you like Zaidi or not, this is a like renewal of hope, if you will, for the San Francisco Giants. It's like finally, everyone loves Buster, face of the franchise for a decade plus. It kind of throw back to the winning days of three World Series, but there is a renewal right now. Like there's rejuvenation. Like I am all in. Buster, take me to the promised land right now if you're a Giants fan.
You know, we talked about how the optics are never good for Brock Purdy initially. He looks like a sawed-off quarterback out of Iowa State. I was out on the guy. Like, no, give me the guy 6'4" who's out of a blue blood. I want the guy out of Alabama, Texas, LSU, yeah. USC, not Brock
Florida
Purdy.
State.
But he's won me over. But the same could be said about Farhan, although Farhan never won me over. He never got to that plateau. Oh, but the optics were bad, is that when your team loses – and then you see Farhan, you're like, okay, I'm getting even more angry because you're the guy.
Right.
Like, you just, as opposed to Buster Posey, who I think is going to buy himself some time, you're like, well, okay, we'll give you another couple of years, Buster, because you're Buster and you look good in the suit, as opposed to Farhan. Yeah, I would just say that president of baseball operations, I said this last week, and I won't delve into this too much this week, but that position is for eggheads. It's for the Farhans of the world. We just got the wrong egghead. But that is an egghead position. I mentioned Scott Harris, who is the best. He's the head of baseball ops for the Detroit Tigers. He was the GM of the San Francisco Giants. He went to Detroit. He's the guy that is responsible in large part for the turnaround for what is really sort of the envy of just about every major league team to be Detroit that young and that cheap, having all those players under team control. And who's Scott Harris? Scott Harris was an econ major in college. Scott Harris went to the Columbia Business School of Management. That's where these guys are from when you're talking about tendering offers for arbitration or overseeing a minor league system or putting together an analytic team. It's about guys that do that sort of thing, that have that sort of ability, that they're equipped with that. It's in their bag. Not Buster. Buster can walk through the halls and say, you know who I am, I'm Buster Posey. Yeah, that carries weight to a certain degree, but in terms of all the minutiae, including tendering an offer to somebody who's arbitration eligible, yeah, you could outsource all of that. But if you can outsource stuff, then why did we hire you? Usually the guys that oversee that stuff have a vision, and they want their hands and on top of just about, they want to touch everything because they want to establish their vision.
Which it was for Zaidi.
Yeah.
He was changing lineups and stuff, which Buster's not going to do that, most likely. I would assume he's not. He'll trust his manager and GM and those guys to do their job, and he'll do his. But my father, for his comedy, as it is, he always believed that Farhan Zaidi was a Dodgers double agent to come in and just turn the Giants into a mess, which I never thought that. They won 107 games and almost beat the Dodgers in the playoffs one year. But, you know, Giants fans, I think when they see the name Buster Posey at the top of the list in regards to who's in control, it gives you this, like, we're calm. Hey, look, he may not be an econ major, but he knows baseball better than almost anybody does, right? He was under Bochy as a great manager. He's played with the Crawford and the Belts and the veteran guys like Pat Burrows on the staff currently. He knows Bob Melvin, Bay Area rivalry and whatnot, you know. And Buster may fail. It could be a disaster. But I think what it does is it gives you someone to point to and say, you know what? Like, you actually know baseball. And not to say that stats and analytics aren't a part of the game anymore. They certainly are. It's a very, very, very important part, which Saidi was good at to a certain degree, but I think it ran its welcome. It was done. Okay, you know, it's not working, move on, but I think I speak for 99% of Giants fans where it's like, finally, there's a name we like, a player we love, and hopefully he can steer us back to a winning product on the field. Matt Chapman's back for a big contract. You hopefully sign some big-name guys in the offseason. I mean, I don't want to get my hopes up, but Juan Soto, I know he's a Yankee now and everything, goodness, man, Chris O'Connell, who works at the station, was like, we're signing everybody now. And I won't go that far, but the hopes are certainly very, very high for Buster Posey in San Francisco.
Okay, let me just end the suspense right now. All right. Soto is not coming to San Francisco. Shohei Ohtani is not coming to San Francisco. All right. Aaron Judge is not coming to San Francisco. The San Francisco Giants, they can hit the sweet spot for somebody like that of a Willie Adames. It's an upgrade from Milwaukee, and you can afford him. And I was in on Pete Alonso, but if this guy, this Bryce Eldridge is on the fast track, then you don't need a Pete Alonso. You just need, I don't know, Flores just hold it down for a couple of months until
Anthony Santander from the Orioles, switch hitter, got some power. I love that.
I think that your outfield, I mean, it's not, you're close. You're close because, you know, right now, the only position that I think is an area of concern is right field. I'm done with Yastrzemski. Sorry, bro. I cannot see you, like, fly out to right field anymore. I'm done with Yastrzemski in right field. But Elliot Ramos, Jung-Hoo Lee, and give me a right fielder. You plug somebody in there, and suddenly it's a baseball team. And obviously, you know, you got to adjust the pitching. But they're not that far away. Again, I just don't see Buster Posey. When I think of Buster Posey, I'm like, you know, one of his strengths, it's tendering an offer to somebody who's arbitration eligible. Yes, I feel good about Buster Posey. Hell yeah, go get him, Buster. Not going to happen. So somebody on the text line here, Sterling, as we continue with the comparisons for Brock Purdy, we heard our man Marlon out in Oakland give us Rich Gannon. And initially we had to think about it, and then we're like, okay, wait, Rich Gannon been in the league for like 25 years when he finally got to Oakland. That I'm not going there. But I like this, that somebody's throwing out a comparison to Purdy. How about a young Drew Brees? Now, I would say this about Drew Brees is that, yeah, they're very similar in terms of their height. I would say Drew Brees had a stronger arm back in the day. Later on, he could not throw past 30 yards. And Drew Brees is going to go down as probably one of, if not the most accurate quarterback in my lifetime. And while Brock Purdy is accurate, I don't know that he has that pinpoint type of accuracy for the veteran out of Purdue, Drew Brees.
Well, it's so funny because you hear names like Drew Brees, and a lot of that is because of his size, right? Brock's a smaller guy. Brees was, you know, on the tippy toes looking over the offensive line, like, I can't see anybody, but I'm going to take a shot downfield, and he was phenomenal. Drew Brees is one of the greatest quarterbacks of the last 25-plus years, but you go back to Kyle Shanahan's, it may have been the pre-draft process or the post-draft post-draft press conference after they picked Trey Lance, and they asked Kyle what he wanted in a quarterback, and he said he wants a mixture of Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson. And the expectation was, okay, that's going to be Trey Lance, and obviously it wasn't, but then you get Brock Purdy, who, funny enough, is the smaller guy like Drew Brees was, is accurate, not to Drew Brees' extent, but accurate enough. He's making plays with his legs like Lamar Jackson does, has a better 10-yard split. Like, winning a quarterback that is Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson is more of a Josh Allen thing, right? But I think Brock Purdy, with what Kyle Shanahan was looking for in Trey Lance, Brock Purdy is the answer to that question of, you know, who's going to be this next great quarterback in San Francisco. I mean, how many more records does Brock have to break? The most passing yards through his first 25 games in Niner history, a higher passer rating through his first 25 games in NFL history than Patrick Mahomes by 0.1 point. Like, Brock has been what Shanahan wanted all along. Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson combined into one quarterback, which is crazy to say that he was the last pick of the draft and he's that. But I agree that while the heights are, I don't think Purdy will be Brees when it's all said and done, at least in his prime, there can be a lot of similarities there for Brock Purdy.
You know, we talk about Drew Brees and making the comparison between a young Drew Brees and a young Brock Purdy. Drew Brees, when he concluded his career at the collegiate level, for Purdue, he was in the Rose Bowl against the University of Washington, and it was Drew Brees versus Marcus Tuiasosopo, for you Tuiasosopo fans.
Raider legend.
Yes, and well, Tuiasosopo was thought to be, or he was supposed to be the big draft. He was going to go higher in the draft, than I think he did, than that of Drew Brees. And Drew Brees wasn't regarded as good of a quarterback as that of Marcus Tuiasosopo. And Tuiasosopo sort of flamed out. You're right. Got an opportunity with the Raiders and it never materialized. I think just to go down this path, Marcus Tuiasosopo was before his time. Like, if Tuiasosopo was coming out now with the ability to run and throw, we talk about buying time and being that dual threat, I think he'd be much, much more effective in the National Football League. But we don't need to do a deep dive into Marcus Tuiasosopo. Just interesting one of
your name all the Raider quarterbacks when they were bad. Connor Cook's in there somewhere.
Oh my goodness, the pride of Michigan State. It started that playoff game against Houston. Remember that back in the day? So, the comparisons with Brock Purdy, man, you know, we like to do this, but he's sort of a standalone. And I think that he's been so effective. Not just when you talked about the records that he's been breaking and the numbers that he puts up. And typically, when you think about a 49er quarterback, especially under Kyle Shanahan's tutelage and under his system, you're talking about guys who's throwing that shallow cross, like Jimmy Garoppolo, or checking down. The dinking and Dunkin' Donuts, as they like to call it. Let me just tell you, for those of you, and I don't need to say something that you don't already know for you 49er fans, this dude is going downtown. Like, he's looking to take the lid off. And he has no problem stretching the field. And I want to say that he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks throwing the ball down the field. I'm not talking about within that 15 to 25 yard range. I'm talking about a guy who's looking for the grand slam, who's going for it all on these go routes to Ayuk or whomever. And I think that's part of his game that is somewhat underrated.
Yeah, I know last year, I think Brock ended last season, although didn't have the, you know, these many attempts. I think he was the most efficient deep ball passer in football. And this year, I think it was prior to the Cardinals game, he walked into that game with the most air yards in football for all the nerds out there that are like, he doesn't throw the ball deep and they want the air yards and the passes. They don't want the dink and dunk. Brock was the NFL leader in that category 2 weeks ago. And of course, against the Seattle Seahawks, he throws that 76-yard touchdown pass, which, yes, had a ton of yak involved in it. But Brock is someone that will take what the defense gives him, but also he'll set himself up for success deep downfield over and over again. And I think, you know, it may not be pretty sometimes. Brock is unafraid to throw into double, triple coverage and trust his guys to go up and get it, which sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, that is the gunslinger nature of Brock Purdy. He'll run around for 25 seconds to try to make a big play, and often or not, he will make a big play. And, you know, those are things that Shanahan may kind of wince and say, just trust the system. And Brock's like, you know what? Like, I trust it, but sometimes I have to do my own thing as well and make big plays happen. So he's just a playmaker, man. Like, Brock Purdy's name in the dictionary should have the word playmaker right next to it to me.
One thing about this playmaker, though, if I was Kyle Shanahan, I would just have the conversation, a little caution to the wind. Well, I like the way you're extending, and we've talked about
it.
Just be a little careful when you're reversing field. You know, some of these where he's like turning and going the other way. Yes, it's fun. It's Doug Flutie-esque, but he's also tempting fate because he's. He can get tracked down, and that's losing a lot of yardage. Or I'm afraid that now that he's afraid that he has this renewed confidence, and that everybody is, you know, throwing all these compliments his way, that this is a guy that can extend plays, that he's going to sort of buy into that, start reading these headlines, and going to try and make something out of nothing and throw that pick at a crucial time of a game. You still got to, like, throw the ball away, which he still does, but I'm just afraid that this idea that, well, you know, here I go, I'm going to get on my bicycle, could backfire in a big game at a big moment for the Niners.
Are you saying that you're a little afraid of Brock Purdy playing more like Josh Allen than he's supposed to?
I haven't thought about it that way, but yeah, he doesn't have Josh Allen's capabilities. I'm just saying, stay within what it is that you can do. And yes, he's been elusive, but it's when he's reversing field and is pivoting and going the other way and retreating like 10, 15 yards in the
losing
backfield.
10 yards.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's proven that he can, you know, that he has the ability and the physical ability to sort of make that up and make something out of nothing. But that's a high wire act. And sooner rather than later, it can catch up with you.
Would you want to? So, under Jimmy Garoppolo, when he was a quarterback here, there was a clear, like, you can tell when Shanahan would tighten those reins and Jimmy throws a pick or whatever, fumbles the football, and they run the football like 17 times in a row.
Nine times in an NFC Championship game against the Green Bay Packers.
There is no trust here. Whereas Kyle, sometimes it feels like, well, this year has been a little different, a lot more seven-step drops and just trusting Purdy to win games, which he can, but hasn't worked a lot this year. Do you want Shanahan to tighten those reins? Not like Jimmy Garoppolo's era where it was like, we don't trust you at all, just, you know, screen passes, dump offs, kind of get back to that dink and dunk if Brock does kind of get this more hero ball mentality at times?
No, and I think it's part of the success. You can clearly see where Kyle Shanahan says, do you. Just do you because I trust you.
Okay.
There is clearly a trust factor between the two because he goes through his progression, they say, faster than anybody in the NFL, and he still believes that 9 out of 10 times he's going to make the right decision. I guess my point is just be careful when you're reversing field and you're giving up that much yardage and trying to make something out of a play that's obviously broken down. That has a tendency to come back and bite you in the butt. But as far as your question is as to whether Kyle Shanahan has any sort of structure or is keeping him in bounds, no. I think it's basically it's your world. But I'm trusting you to do the right thing. But you do Brock Purdy, and I think we'll be fine. I think that's the relationship between the two. I could be wrong.
But that goes back to what you said earlier, that Shanahan trusts Purdy the most of any quarterback he's had in San Francisco. And I think you go back to his time in Atlanta, him and Matt Ryan butted heads a ton that first year as the OC with the Falcons, and that's never really been the case for Brock Purdy. Now, different situations for sure. Ryan was a first-round pick, had already had success pre-Kyle Shanahan, whereas Brock was a rookie, had no success before Kyle Shanahan, and was this team's third-string quarterback. But you hear the reports of, you know, Shanahan saying in training camp and OTAs, like, this kid has it. This guy, you know, is already better than Trey Lance, already better than Jimmy Garoppolo, but just can't start him because he has to save face. How do you not start Trey? How do you not start Jimmy when he re-signed that contract for 1 year? But I think you go back, you know, Shanahan, when you watch him since 2017, the emotions he emits from his quarterbacks or to his quarterbacks are usually negative. Whereas when they beat the Lions in the NFC Championship game last year, you watched for the first time a quarterback and a head coach embrace in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy. You can tell there was this emotional connection to each other. There was this ultimate trust that, okay, you know, yeah, it was a crazy win. You almost lost that game. It seemed like all hope was lost in that first half. But, you know, there is a definitive, like, 100% complete trust in both those guys to make the right play, call the right play at the right time. And, you know, that hasn't happened. And it goes back to they are intertwined almost at the brain. Like, they see football the exact same way, which I do think goes into Shanahan saying, you know what, like, I don't have to have reins on you at all. You're going to make mistakes, sure, but more often than not, you're going to make the right play at the right time, and we're going to win a lot of games with you, Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, because I can remember him dressing down Jimmy Garoppolo. And
a
I
lot.
Remember him specifically going over to the bench and just saying, bro, you cannot make that pass. You cannot throw a pick into the end zone. And to Jimmy Garoppolo's credit, Jimmy would just, you could, obviously wasn't privy to what exactly was being said verbatim, but he was just shaking his head like, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And as far as Trey Lance, I mean, Trey Lance never got it. Trey Lance's accuracy was never.
Still hasn't.
Yes, and just, it wasn't even worth dressing down. It wasn't even worth attacking him on the sidelines or berating him because he was just so far away from being the quarterback that everybody envisioned when he went so high in that draft years ago. But you're right. I think that those two are on the same page. Another player who's on the same page, at least for that last game, was Deebo Samuel with the big reception. It was good to see him get back into the end zone. The reason why I mentioned Deebo Samuel, and we can get back to Kyle Shanahan, and we can continue this conversation on the other side, is this: I want to bubble wrap this guy a little more. And if you remember the beginning of the season, Christian McCaffrey wasn't available. Now, we didn't know that it was to the extent it's become to this point where, you know, obviously the damage to the Achilles in both feet. But Jordan Mason was getting carries. And then it was Deebo Samuel who basically was splitting time in that game against the New York Jets as the running back. And I'm talking about he was the lone guy in the backfield.
The wide back.
Not only that, he's getting the ball, and he's going right up the guard's butt, or he's going the A-gap. I'm like, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? This is Deebo. This is a guy who's injury-prone. There's enough wear and tear on this guy. And when I see him returning kicks, and now, since that Jet game, you don't see him going up and inside. Like, he's still at least he's getting Jet sweeps, so they're looking to turn the corner. But maybe we can tease this, but I just want to get your initial thought on the usage of Deebo Samuel, considering how important he is to the team and also considering the numerous injuries that this guy has dealt with over the years.
Without Christian McCaffrey, and even sometimes with Christian McCaffrey, he is the most important offensive player on this team. With the weapons they have, the offense has run through Deebo ever since he's got here in 2019. We saw what he did in 2021, the All-Pro year, carried the offense almost by himself to a playoff appearance and two wins. And so Deebo has to stay upright. This team is different without Deebo, even with CMC healthy, but yeah. Deebo has limited reps in him, limited snaps in his body where you have to preserve him throughout the next, I don't know what it is now, 11 weeks or so, 12 weeks or so, where you watch him last year. He's banged up the entire playoffs. He's on the sideline in the Super Bowl on pivotal plays. That can't happen if you want to win the big one. So I agree with you. Limit what he can do, or limit how many times you utilize him as a wide back and whatnot, but he has to be involved in the offense. And I think that without Christian McCaffrey, the usage will be way up until CMC gets back.
All right, we continue here on 95.7 The Game. We'll get in a little bit more conversation with the 49ers. I do want to go through the NFL and also talk a little postseason baseball. But when we come back, Matthew Wright, the new field goal kicker for the 49ers. Do not, and I reiterate, do not ever try and make another tackle. Kick the ball, pick up your tee, and go to the sidelines. Go get a drink of water. All right? That's not what you're paid to do, young fella. We'll discuss special teams. It's Sterling Bennett, Dan Avone, back after this.
Matthew Wright, who's been around, typical journeyman kicker, and his first kick as a 49er is good to put the first points of the game on the board.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Sterling Bennett and Dan Avone. My man, Cam.
Kicker highlights. Who would have thought?
Seriously, what's he thinking? I mean, it wasn't as if he was the last player between him and a touchdown. There were, correct me if I'm wrong, there were other guys that were angling in that are paid to do that.
He's a gamer, Dan. He's a gamer. Getting his hands dirty. That, I mean, linebacker looks, mentality.
I mean, he seriously looks like the furthest thing from a gamer. We talk about eggheads.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, that looks like a guy who goes
playing video games, not being a gamer.
He looks like a guy who goes from the stationary bike to kicking field goals back to the stationary bike. And in terms of trying to make a to bring down a player who's, you know, got a head of steam in a football game is the last thing in the world you want to see from our man Matthew Wright, who takes over the kicking duties.
But now he's hurt. Separated shoulder. They have two kickers that are hurt now. What do they do? Sign somebody else, maybe.
Well, it's tryouts again, you know? Here we go. It's everybody, man. Come on down. And it's, you know, the beauty of the NFL and the Matthew Wrights of the world, there's another guy who's waiting in the wings.
Sure.
There's another dude who can do exactly what it is that he did. The one thing on Matthew Wright is that there were some, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but on both sides, you didn't see a lot of touchbacks in that game. And I don't know if it was Lumen's Field, I don't know if it was weather conditions, but it was not only Seattle, but there was a lot of returnable kicks on both sides. And I don't know whether, you know, he wasn't getting enough air under his kicks and getting providing an opportunity for his coverage team to get down there. There was sort of a low angle, but the same could be said on Seattle's end as well. I don't know whether the weather conditions or whether, you know, the atmosphere out there in Seattle had something to do with any of that.
Well, it was like 73 degrees. It was a great night for football, so I have a hard time believing, and I know you spent more time out there than I have. I've never been to Seattle, so maybe, you know, doesn't care or doesn't matter how nice the weather may be degrees-wise, but I think it was an effort by the Seattle kicker, Jason Myers, to make sure San Francisco takes the ball out, but you watch the field goals Matthew Wright made, and he was perfect. That ball was coming off his foot weird. They were just like little, you know, little chip shots in, but the ball just didn't have much strength behind it. So it felt like he couldn't kick that far. And you watch that game, and at a certain point in time, San Francisco is leading. What was that at that time? There's 23-3, and next thing you know, a 97-yard kick return because Matthew Wright can't get touchbacks. So I would like to think they would rather that ball go in the back of the end zone every single time. He just couldn't.
Where are you at with two things? Special teams, Schneider, obviously, an accomplished coach when it comes to special teams.
And is he, though?
Well, I'm leaving it up to you.
Okay.
Talk to me about Schneider. Are you going to make a change when it comes to special teams? And where are you at with Sorensen in the defense?
We'll start with Sorensen. Sorensen, he's called six games. It was a lot better performance against the Seattle Seahawks than it was against the Cardinals and whatnot. So I think with time, he'll learn. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, things will get better. Again, you didn't have four starters. Hargrave's out. Greenlaw hasn't played all year. Mooney Ward is a scratch before kickoff even happens. And Hufanga's back on IR, and you have to have young guys step up. They did. I thought it was a great game by Nick Bosa and whatnot. So you're hoping things are going the right direction with the defense. defense, but it's one game, time will tell. But on Brian Schneider and the special teams, fire everybody. 32nd ranked unit in football. They have cost this team so many big games. They've cost this team games this year. I don't care how good you were in Seattle before you got to San Francisco. It's been a disaster. Every game you are holding your breath on kickoffs, on punts, on field goals. It doesn't matter. This team is terrible on special teams. Sure, players got to make plays. That's fine. And I get they got you a fumble against Seattle on Thursday, and they got you a touchdown on a blocked field goal 2 weeks ago, but I don't care. The mistakes you've made have outweighed the good you've done for three or four seasons now. You have 8 days until your next game. Make a change. You got time. Make a change. Be 22nd, not 32nd in football. It's terrible.
Special teams, as anybody will tell you, and back in my days at St. Ignatius, shout out to the Wildcats, that was like the first thing that we would practice every day. And it's making a high school analogy, but just to show the level of importance, because I always remember that our coach said, this is going to win and lose us a couple of games every single year is special teams. And just to put a level of importance on that facet of the game. And so anybody who follows sports and knows football knows just how crucial special teams is. And I'm surprised because usually the 49ers are so efficient in that area. And now without another kicker, They haven't been
efficient. That's the issue. Under Kyle Shanahan, I get 2017, 2018, not great teams. But the special teams unit has cost them games since 2019. It's not been good, and Brian Schneider was brought in to fix the issues. It's only gotten worse. I mean, whether it's playoff games against the Packers, big kickoff and punt returns, fumbles in the Super Bowl with McCloud and Daryl Luter Jr., Hufanga blocks or Jordan Willis blocks a punt in Lambeau, and Hufanga picks it up, and you win that game because of special teams. But for every great thing, there's three or four bad things that happen before and after that. So it's like, If the punt isn't blocked in Minnesota, you win that game most likely. If you don't miss a field goal and you don't blow a punt coverage, you beat the Rams in that game. We're talking 4-2, 5-1, not 3-3. Fingers crossed, your season's still alive if you don't beat the Seahawks this game. So they've not been good. I get it. Shanahan wants to be hands-off and say, forget it, whatever. But it's like, at a certain point in time, you're losing games because you can't execute correctly. Why has a change not been made? That's my question. Why?
You mentioned Talanoa Hufanga going back to that Green Bay game of the playoffs and that, like, 9-degree weather. And he, of course, recovers that block punt and takes it into the end zone for the touchdown. That was a game, by the way, just to sidetrack, that was our man Jimmy Garoppolo beating Aaron Rodgers out there in Green Bay in the frigid tundra that is beautiful Wisconsin that time of the year. And it really was sort of the beginning of the end. I think anybody in Green Bay that saw Aaron Rodgers those last 2 years has said, New York, you want him? You can have him. We'll take Jordan Love. We're good with that.
Oh, yeah.
But just to get back to Talanoa Hufanga, out with another injury. Look, I think it's a bad time if you're Talanoa Hufanga. It's never a good time to be out with an injury. But when you're talking about getting paid, his contract's up. Same with Charvarius Ward. And I think with the emergence now, you need to see more. But with Renardo Green, Malik Mustafa, you're beginning to see some, and Jair Brown now in his second year out of Penn State. Some of these kids now, as they get more reps, they're beginning to suddenly make a name for themselves. And the 49ers can't bring everybody back. And I think it's either going to be Charvarius Ward, Talanoa Hufanga, or potentially both that don't come back to San Francisco next year. Why? Because if I got players under team control that maybe aren't as good, I'm going to roll the dice with Renardo Green and Malik Mustafa as opposed to paying you guys. And the real reason why is because whether you're paying Brock Purdy $60 or $70 million, I need a little loose change in my pocket to afford that deal.
My biggest fear, and you can look at it this in one of two ways, is that one, Hufanga's hurt again, which stinks. You want him to be healthy. When he's healthy, he's a great player. Maybe there's a discounted price you can retain him at, and he can be that third safety, or maybe even a starter again next year. But my biggest fear is that him being a USC guy, that he goes down the road next year and plays for the Rams. That's my biggest fear, and it's certainly a possibility. He knows the defense. He knows the system. He is from down there, essentially. Like, I'd want to bring him back on a cheaper contract, but if Mustafa plays really well, which in one game's time, he gets the big pick in the first quarter and, you know, seems to spark the defense. And I think overall, when it's all said and done this year, he'll be this team's best safety. That's the potential he has over Jair Brown and over Hufanga. But, you know, they drafted Mustafa for a reason. They had the foresight to say, you know what? Hufanga off the injury, contract year, we got to have somebody else in here that can be a good coverage player and a great tackler. That is Malik Mustafa. So I think they prepared themselves for life without Hufanga, but that's not just a one-year conversation. That's a, you know, when he's gone potentially next year too. So it stinks, but right now they did the same thing with Mooney Ward. You bring in Renardo Green, second-round pick. He almost has the exact same player comp to Charvarius Ward. So they made it a effort to, you know, find replacements for star players that could leave in the offseason.
That Malik Mustafa's a thumper, man. Like, he comes downhill. He's got some...
Yeah, he's laying some wood.
He's got some Ronnie Lott in him. Not like I know I made the analogy...
It's not that far.
...between Brock Purdy and Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
He's just one of those guys that likes... He likes to stick his head in there. He likes to put his hat in there, as they like to say. And you don't see that a lot. I mean, Talanoa Hufanga was like that. But supporting the run these days, whether it's your corners or your safeties, sort of a dying breed. But he's a guy that likes to get up and in there and be that sort of hybrid linebacker. Speaking of the other cornerbacks, so I think D'Amador Lenore is another guy you got to pay. To me, that's a no-brainer. He's an up-and-coming sort of, I don't know if anybody's a quote-unquote lockdown corner anymore, but he's getting to that territory. He is one of the best, I think, in making a name for himself in the NFL, certainly as one of the young cornerbacks. I think, to me, you sign him. But what are you doing with Mooney Ward? Would you let him walk?
I mean, he's hurt this year right now. You know,
but even when he's played Sterling, he's not been the same Mooney Ward. He just looks like he's not the same guy, getting beat and just, I don't know. It's something's off.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to attribute those things to injuries. He had the adductor surgery in the offseason. Who knows how much that's affected his play. He's had these lingering lower body injuries throughout the season. So I would like to say those are injury concerns or the poor plays because of those things. But yeah, when he's been out there, the run defense has been poor. Not great in coverage, and it's so funny because, you know, we all like Charvarius Ward here at the station, and as fans, he's been this team's number one cornerback for a couple years now, and he's locked down some really great receivers, including DK Metcalf last year, in both times playing Seattle, but you go back and you watch that Vikings game, he's complaining in the post-game press conference, why am I not shadowing Justin Jefferson? And then in games after, he can't even beat the other team's best receiver at times. So that's why I lean towards him being injured and that being the cause of his, I guess you can say, the poor play thus far. But you had a week off. You didn't play against Seattle. You have 10 days off in between your next game. So I'm hoping those 17-ish days off he can get right because he's got to play his former team coming up soon. So I'm hoping that although I would not pay him in the offseason, because, again, guys got to go to maintain the majority of your core and your roster. But they need him this year to step up in a big way. So I'm hoping he can get right and play great against Kansas City next Sunday.
Oh, speaking of which, let's talk about them Chiefs. The undefeated Kansas City Chiefs. You know, again, as much as you want the 49ers to be undefeated, it's about peaking at the right time. Because if you were to ask me what's the best team in the AFC, it ain't Kansas City, it's Baltimore. I know Baltimore got beat by the Raiders, right?
Interesting.
Oh, hell yeah. Have you seen what Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry are doing these days?
Oh, yeah.
And the defense is always the defense under John Harbaugh. That's the team to me right now that I want nothing to do with. If, let's say the season were coming to an end and you got to play a Super Bowl. They are the best team in the AFC from what I've seen. But Kansas City is undefeated. It's a Chief team now that we talked about Devontae Adams. They could use a wide receiver or not because it's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, for crying out loud, that guy.
I hope not.
He makes something out of nothing. But what are your thoughts on Kansas City? Do they still scare the hell out of you?
I mean, why wouldn't they? It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Travis Kelce, who I don't care how, I guess you can say, subpar of a year they're having. They're 5-0. Spagnuolo's coaching the crap out of that defense out there, and he always does. I mean, even in the Super Bowl this past year, and even go back to 2019, San Francisco did a job in stopping Patrick Mahomes for 3.5 quarters, almost 4 quarters this past year, especially. They got interceptions. They got takeaways. They got turnovers. Go back to when they got destroyed at Levi's and the first game Brock Purdy ever played in Christian McCaffrey's debut. Hufanga gets the early pick. That game is close at halftime. Slowing down Mahomes, albeit is tough, really hasn't been San Francisco's main issue. It's the offensive dry spells. So if the offense can refine themselves after a win against Seattle and execute in the red zone, yeah, there's concerns. It's Mahomes, it's Kelce, it's those guys out there. Andy Reid's calling plays, called whatever, calling cheeseburgers, whatever he's calling them out there. Like, San Francisco can beat the Chiefs. The Falcons almost beat the Chiefs. The Bengals, with a terrible defense, almost beat the Chiefs. It's just about making the big play at the right time to hopefully pull out a victory, which I know the Chiefs have been San Francisco's Achilles heel, but I think San Francisco, before they went on their dynasty run in the 80s, had this problem with the Cowboys. They couldn't beat them in the playoffs. They beat them in the regular season, then see them again come playoff time and get over the hump. So maybe this is the year San Francisco can get over the hump against Kansas City.
You know, Patrick Mahomes is, it's hard to cheer against this guy. It really
is. I can't
is.
Stand him.
Really?
I can't stand him. No, I can't stand
okay,
him.
Okay, now you need to tell me why.
I don't know if it's like his voice, the way he plays.
Oh, he's just Kermit the Frog.
I mean, he is, but then it's like, then you add in, you know, the wife, her yelling and screaming at the fans,
okay,
and being obnoxious.
Yeah. Okay,
and like then his
wife.
Brother, which that's not Patrick's fault, but it's just the collective, like, he's the golden boy of the NFL, and I think this is how other fan bases felt with Tom Brady, where the later half of his career, I loved Tom Brady, but early on, I couldn't stand him. Beat the Raiders, the tuck rule, the game-winning field goals, just squeaking out these weird wins left and right in the biggest games. Like, it just makes me not want to, like, I just can't root for Patrick Mahomes. You know, the Super Bowl losses for sure don't help, but it's like, I think of any team over Dallas, over the Seahawks, I hate the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the Chiefs. I just like Patrick Mahomes. When I think about him, I want to be critical. I want to say, yeah, you're right. Tom Brady back in the day with the perfect hair and the perfect life and the perfect wife and just TB12. Yeah. You could see where there's like, yeah, bro, I'm out on you. I'm tired of this. I want to see you get beat. Just like Steph Curry pisses a lot of people off. People think his life has been a boulevard of unblinking green lights. Dad played in the NBA. You got the perfect family life. You're a good-looking guy and you're doing the shimmy. Screw you. I don't know. When it comes to Mahomes, I saw him. Maybe this is where this stems from. I saw him in the playoffs. There was a shot. Kansas City obviously just lost to the New York Yankees in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Oh,
and
yeah,
there was a shot of him, because obviously it's Kansas City, and the game was in Kansas City, Royals-Yankees. And the Royals had just scored a couple of runs. Everybody's going nuts, and there was a shot of him in the suite. And he was going nuts. He was jumping up and down. He was getting in his buddy's face. He just, all the others, his brother doesn't bother me. His brother's sort of out there, but it's, I don't know. I want to hate the guy. And then he's got like a dad bod. You know, we talk about our man TB12 and Tom Brady. He's the antithesis, man. He's walking around with a spare tire. He just sort of like, there's something about him that's sort of real. And when I hear him talk in that Kermit the Frog voice, it's just, I want to hate the guy, but I can't get there. I don't know. Maybe
I think it's
support.
Just the success.
Well, yeah,
to me,
success.
It's the success.
Sure,
it bothers me.
Innately, we hate people that do well.
Right.
You know, that's just
right.
Sort of as sports fans, that's the way it is. But when you sort of pull back, there's other people that I could like not like. But this guy,
it's like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, well, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, no, there's a lot of people on that dude, but And getting back to his dad bot, that's the one thing I would say about Patrick Mahomes. As great as he is, when you get to the other side of 30, that catches up with you. Like, there's a reason why Tom Brady was able to be successful and win a Super Bowl on the wrong side of 40. It's because of TB12 and being that freak about everything that goes into his body, having a dietitian that is on his payroll, the same with LeBron James and anybody that wants to extend their career. This is a real thing. So while it's cute now and somebody like me is buying in, look at the, you know, roly quarterback who's got, you know, a little love in there in the middle of his midsection. It's sort of a sticky thing that will prevent you from going to where it is that you want to go. When we, you know, project this guy out in terms of what it is that he could be when it's all said and done with, I mean, he's right on the heels of Tom Brady right now. Okay? And
I mean, come on.
If he wins another Super Bowl...
He's got three? He already has three, right?
Yeah, and so now...
Yeah, he has three.
And Tom Brady never three-peated. I'm just saying he's closing that gap, and he's still got a lot of football left. But he's never going to get there if he's eating Twinkies and Ho-Hos every night.
I mean, not to compare the body types, but this is the LeBron James, Michael Jordan conversation of the NFL now. You know, Brady has the rings, MJ has the rings, LeBron is great, and he also has some rings, but didn't beat Brady in the Super Bowl in 2020. And, you know, I think the NFL is watching, you know, the GOAT versus GOAT conversation kind of take place in front of us where, you know, Montana and Brady never faced off. We got to see Mahomes and Brady go toe-to-toe for a couple of years in the AFC, and then in 2020 we saw what happened in the Super Bowl. So, I think the NFL is watching the GOAT conversation kind of happen in real life, I guess, take shape, where we saw these guys face off and whatnot. But even Mahomes, I don't know, man. I just can't get behind it. He's a great quarterback. He can go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. I just can't buy in to what he's selling me, whether it's the family stuff, whether it's the voice, maybe because he's so darn good. I just can't buy in. Like, whenever I see him, I just roll my eyes and I go, ugh, get him off my screen. Same with the Kelce's now, too. I cannot go a day in my life without watching television or a sports game without a Travis Kelce or a Jason Kelce appearance. I'm over it. I don't care. They're handsome, they're nice, they're fun-loving. I don't care. I don't want to see him anymore in my next hopeful 50-plus years of life. I'm done.
I think...
hate him.
I'm just looking up for the record. Hold on. So he has the three Super Bowls. Tom Brady has the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Super Bowls. We won 2002, 2004, 2005, 2015, 2017, 2019, 2021. Yeah, he has seven. So he has the one with Tampa Bay because Belichick and company have six, and he has the extra one. So Mahomes is halfway there. Now, the GOAT conversation is an interesting one. I think that Patrick Mahomes is the better quarterback, isn't he? I mean, Brady never,
physically, yes,
never did this stuff. Like, Patrick Mahomes is I think, to me, he's the greatest I've ever seen. I know we measure these things by Super Bowls. He's not even 30, so he's got, you know, if he gets a couple more, I'm willing to say that's the greatest of all time, just because of everything else that he does. Tom Brady never made a no-look throw for a first down. Tom Brady never, and I know a lot of that stuff is for show, but just dropping down, throwing from different angles, the ability to run, and we talk about making something out of nothing. And I know that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is public enemy number one, but I'm willing to go there and anoint him the greatest of all time. A lot sooner rather than later. In other words, I don't think he has to get to seven Super Bowls for me to come to that conclusion. Obviously, you don't feel the same.
No, it's the same thing with Rodgers, right? Rodgers gets the MVP, he wins one ring. You know, what could his career look like? The arm talent, the no-look passes, the mobility, and Brady's like, yeah, okay, I'm still winning over you continually, and now Brady's retired and whatnot, but, I mean, People forget Tom threw 50 touchdown passes in 1 year, and him and Randy Moss had one of the greatest receiver quarterback years of all time. Like, Brady was elite of the elites amongst playing with Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers, and even later in his career, Patrick Mahomes. He beat Mahomes. Like, that matters to me.
He did. I want to say Mahomes was in his second year in the NFL, so it might have been his rookie year when he lost that AFC championship game, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I just think that what he's able to do is just Tom Brady was accurate, and Tom Brady needed time to do what it is that he did. As Patrick Mahomes is just sort of reinventing the whole sport. And I think opinions change that once in 10 to 15 years when we visit this. I get it. Right now, he's a guy that's just a pain in the butt because he beats the 49ers and he's the best, and you have to deal with all of that. Same with Tom Brady. When Tom Brady was on top of the mountain, there were a lot of people that vilified him for just being Tom Brady and the perfectly coiffed hair and all that crap. So, I don't know. Does Brock Purdy eventually get into that conversation? I won't go there in terms of the GOAT, but as far as the 49ers are concerned, we got to get to a break. What the hell are you doing, Sterling? I was going to roll right through this thing.
It's my fault.
We come back. I do want to just dabble into the postseason, talk a little baseball, and also touch on the rest of the NFL when we continue after this.